SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome into this Friday edition of the Early Line here on the Sports Grid Network. We are that much closer to a national champion in college football after last night. Not to mention, we've got, of course, Wild Card Weekend in the NFL coming up. And you mix in some really good college basketball matchups. The NBA continues to deliver. Were the Cleveland Cavaliers going to get upended after their great win at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder? We got a lot to discuss here this morning. Joe Ranieri alongside Mark Zinno here. And Zin, it is shaping up to be one heck of a weekend, is it not?
Yeah, look, 5 days of playoff football in a row between college and the NFL certainly didn't disappoint with the game that we had last night. Back and forth contest, a lot of excitement, went down to the wire, and you know, just a great job all around by both schools. And, you know, some of us on the right side, some of us were on the wrong side. And I don't want to know which side I'm on anymore. Just not.
I'm having a feeling that I have an idea. So let's start there for the 7-7 here today with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. For the first time since 2012, they are playing for a national title after they advanced to the college football playoff national championship game in Atlanta, your neck of the woods, Mark. 27-24 was the final against Penn State. A costly late interception by Drew Aller proved to be the difference in a game in which saw four lead changes, Mark, in it, including a wild fourth quarter. This game was 10-3 at the half here, my man, but ultimately the thing that had plagued Notre Dame all year ended up winning it for them, and that was their field goal kicker here. Heck of a game for Notre Dame.
Yeah, they're like Maximus in Gladiator. Like, they just won't die. There's an argument that they were not the better team either of the first two playoff games that they played, and somehow they came out on top. And if you look at the box scores, the numbers would tell you they won a game they didn't deserve to win. Kind of really not the case last night. The box score looked good for Notre Dame, and they came out on top, but they didn't look like they were in control of that game for a long stretch, other than the third quarter where they came out, tied the game at 10, and the momentum felt like it was swinging. But what happened again? That it was another Riley Leonard interception that put the ball back in the hands of Penn State, and Penn State went down the field, got a lead. I mean, you have to tip your cap to Notre Dame. They just keep surviving and advancing.
That's what the name of the game is. Notre Dame will take on the winner of tonight's Ohio State-Texas game in the Cotton Bowl. We'll have more on both of those games coming up. But also in the news, in response to the wildfires that are ongoing around the Los Angeles area, the NFL has stepped in and moved the Minnesota Vikings and Los Angeles Rams game. It is being moved to Glendale in Arizona. The league made that announcement yesterday. We all kind of thought that was coming in the interest of public safety. I mean, our thoughts and prayers with the folks in Southern California right now. But that game moving to Glendale feels like advantage Rams here, Zen. No, that's a field they know very well.
It is, but there's one area I think that the advantage sort of swings back in favor of the Minnesota Vikings, and that's the fact that you have Sam Darnold making his first ever playoff start against a Matthew Stafford, who's a very experienced quarterback. Look, first-time quarterbacks in the postseason have not fared well, 19-38 straight up since 2002. When those less experienced quarterbacks play on the road, they're 11-21 straight up. So is this really a true road game anymore? The answer is no, it's not. It's not like the Rams had much of a home field advantage to begin with, but I would argue that there would be more Minnesota fans, you know, being willing to access going to Arizona last minute than they would have been going to L.A. at this point in time, simply merely because of the cost and the price of hotels and everything else. So this may be a chance here for this sort of level off a little bit. And odds makers have told you with the line flip that, guess what? Once you take it out of L.A., Minnesota's a favorite here. So I think it swings a little bit back in the favor of the Minnesota Vikings here.
Indoors, fast track, so the total should still be on track for a fun one there if both offenses show up. We learned, of course, that the Raiders are absolutely still dysfunctional. A 4-13 Raiders team. Well, they're just cleaning house again here, Mark. 2 days after they fired Antonio Pierce, their head coach, well, they announced yesterday that, yep, they're firing the general manager, Tom Telesco, after just 1 year as well. This is now the second time in the last 13 months that Telesco had been fired by an AFC West team. You may recall the Chargers let him go after 11 years and that 63-21 beatdown that came at the hand of the Raiders last December. They just said, listen, dysfunction in the clubhouse. Dysfunction starts at the top. And it looks like the Davis family saying, you know what? Got to go. Got to start over. We didn't make the right decisions.
Yeah, unfortunately for Tom Telesco, he just didn't do enough to turn this whole thing around. And in reality, when you look at it, I mean, his best draft pick might have been the one he had this past year in Brock Bowers, right? Like, there's just not a lot to hang your hat on here for Telesco. And a lot of people want to point to Brady and say this is his influence. I don't have any knowledge of that one way or another. But at the end of the day, it was one of those things where, look, when you have a coach and a quarterback, or I'm sorry, a coach and a GM, rather, who haven't made the playoffs in four consecutive years, and I know Pierce was sort of a interim, then got the title, usually changes are coming. You can't continue to hang on after 4 and 5 years without making a postseason appearance and go, things are trending in the right direction. So ultimately, I think that's what did in Tom Telesco as the GM tenure. A little bit odd that they had to fire the coach, and then 2 days later come back and go, you know, we've rethought about this. I guess it's time for the GM to go too, but that's a little wonky to say, but it is the Raiders.
That is the Raiders. Well said there. In college, quarterback Carson Beck, formerly of the University of Georgia, kind of took Kirby Smart and company by surprise by entering the transfer portal after he had previously declared for the NFL draft. Not that I think Georgia and Kirby Smart were expecting him back, but the timing of it all, it appears that Kirby Smart and company, but they were taken back by it. They had they thought he was going to go to the NFL, but unfortunately he hasn't hired anybody. So he left the door open to come back to college. And if he does that, Zinn, it won't be at the University of Georgia, it appears.
Yeah, kind of strange. You don't see many quarterbacks who have been under center for two seasons at UGA walk away, right? Like that is a little bit telling. And for whatever reason, Carson Beck feels like his best shot is to go sort of retool under another program and sort of make his resume look a little better. Look, Carson Beck was not a first-day quarterback. He was not a second-day quarterback. He was probably a third-day quarterback in the NFL draft. You're talking about a fourth round and above. And maybe he wants one more year to raise his stock, which is probably smart in his case, and maybe there's another system he can do it under. But case in point, you know, he just didn't have it to take Georgia over the top. Even Stetson Bennett, who won two national titles with him, only ended up going in the fourth round. If Carson Beck couldn't do that, then chances are he wasn't any better than that.
So the Atlanta Falcons, Zinn, say they would be comfortable with Kirk Cousins as their number two quarterback. Interesting. That's a very expensive number two quarterback, but I guess we shouldn't be that surprised here at this point.
No. Well, look, I think Terry Fontenot, the Falcons GM, was posturing yesterday for other NFL teams, basically telling them, well, if you're not going to offer us anything, we're going to keep him. And that's really what this is. He does not want to be there. Cousins is not going to be in a Falcons uniform to start next year. And the word comfortable was certainly cute because, yes, you're comfortable with him on your roster. Like, I'm comfortable with my ex-wife running my 401k. Sure, I'm comfortable with it. But if that's the only option I have, then, yeah, let's go with that. But other than that, no. The Falcons don't want Kirk Cousins here next year.
Yeah, no, it's take a hit there, Kurt. Zay Flowers out for the Ravens. We learned that yesterday. Not that anybody thought he, in fact, was going to play in the game. We knew it was going to be a serious injury there. And the Cleveland Cavaliers somehow managed to come back last night against the lowly Toronto Raptors and win their 12th straight. We got much more to go here. The Early Line on a Friday on the Sports Grid Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And and welcome back into the early line. I'm Joe Ranieri alongside Mark Zeno as we try to put it all together after an amazing night in the college football playoff at the Orange Bowl in Miami. A very unseasonably 50 degrees at kickoff there, Mark Zeno. A lot of not what they're used to here in South Florida at all. And I got to tell you, the way that game and Notre Dame and Penn State started last night, it looked like it was going to be another snooze fest as there wasn't a lot to be excited about. But ultimately, that second half was a game changer. We saw four lead changes. We saw Riley Leonard get hurt in the first half. They had to go to their backup. And if we're being honest here, the 27-24 win by Notre Dame by stepping up and making the plays when they needed to was really the difference in the second half. But this game started kind of like many of us thought, Zin, where the defenses were going to be the story. And it appeared that when Riley Leonard got hurt, that was really kind of the wake-up call, although the backup did great for Notre Dame, led them on their first scoring drive. But it was 10-0 before you could blink an eye with Penn State. And then the Riley Leonard injury, had to go to the tent, looked at as a concussion, but ultimately came back in and the rest was history. But that first half was very interesting to me. It looked like the defenses weren't going to allow the offenses to get off last night. That all changed in the second half, though.
Yeah, look, Penn State had all the momentum in the first half and really could have been 14-0 had they not stalled out in the red zone. I think it was wise at that point for James Franklin to take the points early, just because the sense was that the Notre Dame offense had no shot to do anything against the Penn State defense. It was in full control. So I wouldn't have eschewed the points at that point in time. I didn't necessarily disagree with a point to kick the field goal, but it's just frustrating that they left four extra points off the board. And then when the backup came in, kind of funny that they needed an Italian backup to save the Irish, but that's neither here nor there. We can discuss that a different time. But he was great. Like, I mean, it was one of those things where either Penn State just softened up their defense or whatever, but they didn't look like they pressured him. I didn't know if they didn't know if he was going to run or not and take off. They were really caught off guard. And Notre Dame was able to get a critical 3 points before the half, which really may have saved them at the end of the day, because had they not, and Penn State had gone in 10-0, I think you get a totally different outcome of the game, just because the sense of urgency heading into the second half would have been a lot different. But that it was also that second half opening drive where they went right down the field and tied the game up at 10. I think that really made everything sort of, you know, feel like that Notre Dame got control back at that point in time. And I remember tweeting, I'm like, when did Penn State lose control of this game? Like, what happened? They didn't have a turnover. They didn't make a mistake. They just couldn't do anything on offense. And Notre Dame started moving the ball all over the place. And the momentum really swung. And then we got back and forth into a haymaker battle of you score, I score, you score, I score. You make a mistake, I make a mistake. And we got an exciting 30 minutes of football. But again, I can't figure out Notre Dame. I bet against them all three rounds now. I've been on the wrong side all three rounds. I just don't think they're very good. They played very well last night, and they managed to survive in advance, but I don't think they were the better team on the field for more of that game last night.
Well, they made more plays, and when it mattered the most. And for a team that, listen, we all looked at it and said, hey, this team, they don't have the resume. They haven't played anybody. They lost to Northern Illinois. But the reality is that loss to Northern Illinois was a big wake-up call for them, much like we saw the loss to Michigan apparently be a big wake-up call to Ohio State. But really the story to me was the arm of Drew Aller, who, let's face it here, he didn't complete a single pass to a wide receiver on Penn State, Mark. I mean, you got to be kidding me. 12 of 23, a buck 35. And at one INT and no touchdowns? Like, come on.
If you would have put the two quarterback stat lines up there and said, which one is Riley Leonard and which one is Drew Aller, right, they would have been flipped if you asked me. If you would have told me that one quarterback was going 12 for 23 for 135 yards in an interception, I go, that's Riley Leonard's stat line. 100% that's Riley Leonard's stat line. The other guy went 15 to 23 for 223 yards. I go, oh, that's got to be Aller. Got to be. Even with the two interceptions, I would say that's got to be Aller. So, I just, it was hard to figure out Drew Aller missed a lot of open receivers last night, especially early in the game. You felt like there were a lot of opportunities for Penn State to blow that thing open early, and they couldn't cash in on them. And ultimately, it came back to burn them. But there were a couple of overthrows by Aller to wide-open guys that if they he puts it in, you know, throws him a dime, it lands in right down the sidelines for a touchdown. He missed those kind of throws last night. And again, to your point, the fact that they couldn't complete a single pass to a wide receiver is telling about how off Drew Aller was last night.
Yeah, and listen, give credit to the Notre Dame defense. You know, Singleton, 117 total yards, three touchdowns. He was the story for Penn State, along with Warren, who had six receptions for 75 yards. But that was it. It was those two guys only for Penn State. And ultimately, you know, they, I want to say balanced, because if you look at the Notre Dame numbers, you mentioned it with Riley Leonard, 258 total yards, two touchdowns. He did have the two picks, but I thought Love was great, even banged up, 11 carries, 45 tough yards, including that touchdown run in the third. And how about Greathouse? Seven receptions, 105 yards, and a touchdown. They spread the ball around. They had all three facets working. The run game, the passing game was working when they needed it. It just, there was not enough for Penn State, ultimately, Zinn, when it came down to it offensively. And that's ultimately what cost them in the end there. That game should not have been close. But unfortunately, they made it close.
Yeah, again, I mean, James Franklin, and I'll say this much, you know, I don't want to hear anybody blame James Franklin about his now 1-15, right? James Franklin did not lose that game for his team at all. James Franklin didn't coach a bad game. James Franklin didn't do anything wrong. James Franklin did everything right in that game for his team to win it. His guys didn't make plays. That last night was not about James Franklin being a choke artist or coming up small in big games. Had nothing to do with it. His quarterback made a bad decision. Who knows how it would have worked out in overtime had they gone there. But his quarterback made a bad decision, and it cost his team the game. That's it. They were in position to win it. That's all you can ask for.
Now 1-18, James Franklin, against AP top five teams. Notre Dame was number three in that AP poll. And we'll hear from James Franklin when we get back here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And welcome back into the Early Line here on the Sports Grid Network. Joe Neri alongside Mark Zinno, as we celebrated for the first time since 2012 last night, Notre Dame will advance to play for a national title as they took down Penn State 27-24. And Penn State and their head coach, of course, James Franklin, now 1-18 all time as a head coach here against AP top five teams. Notre Dame came in as the number three team in the AP poll. Here's what he had to say after just a tough loss in a game that, well, he could have won.
You know, when you're talking about a 16-week season now that we have in college football, there's opportunities to bounce back from setbacks. Notre Dame, you know, was able to do it. And we were able to do it, you know, kept getting better as the season went on, got better, especially the second half of the season. Some big wins, some adversity that we were able to overcome, and the guys just kept battling. So I could not be proud of the young men in that locker room and the staff and how they represented Penn State in the Big Ten all season long. So they deserve a ton of credit. And obviously, we would have loved an opportunity to get a win tonight and then be able to watch the game tomorrow night and figure out who our next opponent was going to be. But again, very, very proud of our guys.
Listen, there's nothing not to be proud of. You made it to this particular point, and I'll give the odds makers credit here, Zinn. This always felt like it was going to be a one-score game. It was a wild second half, four lead chances, a ton of points in the fourth quarter. But ultimately, this was the best game, I think, that we've gotten so far in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I think you'll see something similar tonight in the Cotton Bowl in a back-and-forth matchup. I don't think it's as distant as people and odds makers believe it to be. But that said, you know, again, James Franklin didn't do anything wrong. I hate the fact that he's going to continue to carry forward this loss as a top five loss in his record and everything else. Look, some of that's justified in not beating Michigan and Ohio State within the conference during the regular season. I get it. He's been there a long time. He hasn't beaten those two teams enough. That's fair. But how many other top five games has he really played against top five teams that he's struggled against that are ultimately his fault? I mean, again, it's the way the game goes and the way the ball bounces. Obviously, I was on Penn State last night, felt I should have had a better result, felt like they were the more dominant team for a bigger stretch of that game. Doesn't happen that way sometimes. But, you know, Penn State, by all accounts, you know, was a top seven team all year long. And they finished fourth in the rankings when it was all said and done. So they were a top five teams themselves this year. And they were a team that everybody believed should be in this spot. And they sort of held up their end of the bargain. Yeah, I think Joe froze there. But nonetheless, when you look at the outcome of the game last night and the way it unfolded, you know, both of those teams, to a certain extent, deserve to win the game. And I think that when it comes down to it, you look at how the game ended up, you knew it was going to be the team that blinked last that ultimately ended up giving the win to the other team.
We have the first time ever, in fact, with Notre Dame, the first college team to ever win two bowl games in the same season, thanks to this 12-team field and new playoff. But their head coach, a little different, Marcus Freeman, after the win last night, pretty proud of his team, as well as he should be.
He's so proud of this group. I mean, what a gritty performance, and they found a way when it matters the most to get their job done. Penn State was a heck of a football team. I had a lot of respect for them coming into the game, but have more after the game. It's a really good team, well coached, and it was a tough matchup, you know, but these guys are resilient, and they found a way to make a play when it mattered the most, and that's what, again, is to me, what great teams, great organizations, they're able to, at that moment that they need to do their job or make a play, they do it. And the last play doesn't matter. There's unpredictable things that happen all the time, and they find a way to make it work. And I'm really proud of them, excited for this next opportunity. We'll enjoy this thing today and tomorrow before we figure out who our opponent is. And then we got to get healthy and get back to work for one less guaranteed.
41-yard field goal by Mitch Jeter. And I got to tell you, Zen, that kid slept well last night, if he slept at all, after the season that he had. Kudos to him for making the biggest comeback we have seen in college football in a long time. We'll have more on that game as the early line continues on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, welcome back on this Friday, the early line here on the Sports Grid Network. Joe Neri alongside Mark Zeno, as we are that much closer to crowning a national champion in Atlanta. Notre Dame is already packing their bags. They're ready to go after that win last night against Penn State in the Orange Bowl. And if we take a look here at some of these updated national championship odds from FanDuel, we've got, well, Ohio State -150, still the favorite to win it all. They've got their game against Texas, which we'll talk about coming up. Notre Dame slotted right behind them at +260, which is interesting because they're already in the game. And then Texas as a 4-1 team that might win it all if they're able to get past Ohio State. I would think now is your last chance if you think Ohio State is the way to go. And by the way, the look ahead line for Ohio State is 9.5. And that's a problem, Zin. That's a two score difference between Notre Dame and Ohio State. I'm wondering what that will look like on the money line. What do you think of the future odds here? Should you bet Ohio State now?
No. They have to get past Texas first. Is there a world where Texas wins this game? Yeah, I think there is a way they could win it. Do I think it's probable? No. Do I think it's possible? Yes. So I think it could go down that way. And look, You know, if you're on Texas tonight, you're on the under, right? Because that means they're stopping Ohio State from scoring. I think the over is certainly correlated to Ohio State and Texas not being able to slow them down. Remember, these are two of the best defenses in the country. I just think it's interesting. Like, if you wanted to take Notre Dame right now at plus 260, you know, you're not getting that if Texas ends up getting past them. And even at plus 340 against Ohio State with the look-ahead line on the FanDuel Sportsbook, still, you know, it's like I would give up the $1.20 right now then and hope that Texas gets by, then worry about, you know, a situation where, you know, I'm losing $1.20 against Ohio State when it's 340 and, you know, straight up. So I think there's a little value on Notre Dame at this point in time. Ken, what are you asking me for? Why would I put my money on Notre Dame now after three straight games of losing against them? So why, let's just ride this train right off the cliff. You know, but still, I think that when you look at that look-ahead line, the amount of, I mean, it's not even disrespect, but the delta between these two teams is pretty dynamic. Because again, because Texas and Notre Dame were 3 and 4 in the rankings, and now you're talking about a what? 8-point difference between the two of them in a spread against Notre Dame, right? Yeah. I mean, they were what, a 1-point or a 2-point dog, you know, what are we talking? I'm sorry, 5 points, 5-6 points. So, you know, again, it's pretty interesting to see what odds makers think of Notre Dame along the way here. And again, slight favorite over Georgia, 7.5-point favorite over Indiana. For them to be flipped to a dog is kind of interesting at this point in time, given who they're going to play in the final.
Well, you bring up a good point, though. Ohio State and Texas have to decide tonight exactly who is advancing to take on Notre Dame. As we take a look at the odds here currently, Ohio State 5.5, 52.5 is that total. And that has come down. It opened up 54.5, and we've seen some under money come in throughout the week, now down to 52.5 here, Zinn. And listen, Ohio State, rightfully the favorite. A lot of people think there is a lot of value in backing Texas here, that this too is likely going to be a one-score field goal type of game. But you like the under in this as well, especially if you like Texas.
Well, I like the first half under at 27.5, and it's purely a numbers play when you look at getting 27.5 here. I mean, look, if you're going to get 10 or 11 possessions in the first half, and as long as you don't score 3 touchdowns, guess what? You're going to be good, right? If you end up kicking 3 field goals and you score 2 touchdowns, right there, that's 23. And now, I'm sorry, 23. Now you're sitting here going, you need a sixth score. In the final 3 drives that are left. It's just a numbers play in and of itself. Like, I have to trust the fact that these are the best two defenses in the country and have been all season long by a wide margin, and that both of these coaches, who have sort of pucker factors to themselves, will end up playing a little conservative at the outset to not make a mistake for the other team because they know the defenses are that good. So they may end up punting more. And again, if we get 1 or 2 stops early, Joe, you know, all I got to really avoid here is the quick touchdown strike, the 80-yard touchdown pass, the 70-yard touchdown run. If you avoid those, and even the touchdown drives are long, clock-consuming 6-7-minute drives, you're going to be okay here just because they're going to run out of possessions to be able to score enough. That's really the way I kind of sliced and diced it here with the first half at 27.5. Again, it could go horribly wrong. If Ohio State does touchdown, touchdown, touchdown like they have for the past 2 games on their first 3 drives, guess what? We're dead in the water, and so is the under for the entire game. So I just look at it and go, I think there's also a component where Will Howard sorts of turned into a pumpkin a little bit. Like, Will Howard that showed up the last 2 weeks has been very, very good, but we've seen him have flat spots. He had a flat spot against Nebraska. He had a flat spot against Michigan. Is Texas's defense good enough like those other two defenses to be able to keep him in check? I think so.
Man, Quinn Ewers scares me. He really does. And you know what else scared me? And I thought this Texas team was really good then defensively. But then I watched Cade Klubnik light him up for 340 yards. Then I saw Arizona State and Sam Levitt manage 222 yards in the air and almost 300 yards on the ground. And I'm going, Listen, this is more football than any of these kids have played in their college career. I mean, this season is now long, and it looks like, yeah, maybe they're starting to take a step back. And if that's the case, pick your poison. Who are you stopping on this? Unless, to your point, Will Howard stops himself. Man, you got to pick your poison if you're Texas, right?
I've heard everybody say that over the last week plus about Texas and how much their defense gave up to Cade Klubnik and Arizona State. What have I always said to you? I never trust Steve Sarkisian for a full four quarters, ever.
No, that's,
his first half is always his best half. What did Texas do to Clemson in the first half? Held him to 10 points and under 100 total yards. What did they do to Arizona State? Held him to 3 points and under 100 yards. So, like, I get it. The total game numbers were what they were, but that's because Sarkisian is a terrible adjustment coach. And he just sort of keeps running the same thing back for four quarters. You know, he's got a lead instead of going, guess what? Let's continue to keep them guessing. Let's continue to keep our foot on the gas pedal here. We'll just keep doing what worked for the first 30 minutes, and we'll hope to win a football game. Yeah. That's the only reason I'm playing the first half and the first half under here. I think it's the best Sarkisian you're going to get. I think it's the best version of the defense you're going to get. And so I look at it and go, yeah, I think there's a chance here that this thing stays under in the first 30 minutes. Could it end up going over late? Possibly. But let's not underscore what Cade Klubnik and Scatabo and everybody else really did in the first half of those games, which was very, very minuscule.
Yeah. Yeah. He was forced to throw because they were trailing Clemson. They had to play catch up. Yeah. And Arizona State, same situation there. So it's going to be interesting to see. So what we get from Chip Kelly and that game plan coming out in, because he has decided all of a sudden in the playoffs that we're not going to take it slow and try to run the ball, establish. No, we're coming out and firing, and we're gonna use our receivers, the size advantage that they have over the secondaries, Will Howard's experience. It's worked so far. I'm going to be very interested how they go and attack this Texas secondary here in this game, which leads to a whole lot of opportunities for anytime touchdowns with some of these Ohio State and Texas players. We'll look at some of these numbers, including is Will Howard. Are they going to win this on Will Howard's arm? Are they going to win it on Quinn Ewers' arm? We'll take a look at what those prop numbers are, and we'll see if there's any value in a couple of bets to make. And we'll do that as we get ready for the Cotton Bowl here on the early line on the Sports Grid Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, welcome back in here, the early line. Joe Ranieri alongside Mark Zeno as we're getting ready for the Cotton Bowl here tonight. We know Notre Dame back in South Bend awaiting to see who it is that they'll be playing for a national championship. And it looks to be a good one here, although you wouldn't know it by the way this game is priced, as the market believes that Ohio State can't lose this game as they are a 5.5, 6-point favorite. But the total coming down here a little bit. And to me, Zin, this is all about, A, how many points wins this game? What is the winning team's score? Is it 27? Is it 24? Is it 30? And if it is a big number, well, then some of these props that we got here with Will Howard, who has been throwing the ball all over the place, I'm seeing him at, 244.5 passing yards. Are they going to run it? If it's a lower scoring game, should we be looking maybe more at the rushing props with Judkins and Henderson here? It's interesting, depending on how you think the script rolls here. If Texas's defense falls apart in the second half like they've done the last couple of games, should we be looking at all of these guys going up and over, especially Will Howard?
The only ones I would really look at, I think that, you know, if you're in favor of Texas and you think Texas has a shot to win this game, and I would say that any of the passing or receiving props, if they go over, Texas may be dead in the water. Right? Like, could Quinshon Judkins get 60 yards over the course of four quarters in a tight game, especially one that's defensive and close? Yes. Could Trevion Henderson do the same? Yes. But if Smith and Agukpa are over their receiving yards props, Texas is getting beat in the secondary, they're dead. They just cannot play catch up against this Ohio State defense. They literally can't. Again, Michigan beat Ohio State in a low scoring slugfest. Nobody, Will Howard wasn't able to throw the ball. He didn't have time. He wasn't comfortable in the pocket. All those things are true. If Texas wants to beat Ohio State, they have got to do it up front and make Will Howard uncomfortable. But if he throws for more than 250 yards and both of those receivers are anywhere over their receiving yardage prop, I think Texas is dead. I just don't, I don't see a game script where Texas wins an over game in a shootout. Like, I understand we think Quinn Ewers in this offense can do that, right? We've seen them put up 40 points at will, but a lot of that has been on the ground this year. A lot of that has been their defense dominating, forcing three and outs, getting the ball back quickly, and just overpowering people. I get it. That's not going to happen here against Ohio State. You're going to be able to move the ball. You know, one first down, you're going to end up punting. And that's what you need Ohio State to do here. So I don't think the over favors Texas at all. If we get even close to the thing, I don't think Texas can win the game. If Ohio State touches 30, Texas may be dead.
So it definitely correlates with you then. So Texas in an under, Ohio State in, and if they're going to cover Ohio State, you think it's going to be because it's a shootout and they're going to get, and the defense, let's not forget the defenses in a game like this too. You said it, two top defenses. We saw turnovers play a big role last night. Could it play a big role in this game tonight, setting up some easy scores? We've seen it.
Joe, this is the essence of my whole handicap of the first half under. Nobody wants to make the first mistake. Nobody wants to give the other team a short field, because while these defenses are great, if I only got to go 30 yards, guess what? I'm likely giving up points, at least three. So that's not what you want to happen here, and continue to put good defenses on short fields and ask them to make stop, and hope the team settles for a field goal. So, yeah, I think takeaways will be a big part of it. But I also think both these coaches are going to turn around and go, I don't want to be the one who makes the mistake first. I don't want to try to play catch up against this defense, because it's not a formula that you know, bodes well for me as a coach. So the idea is to keep it within one score the whole way, play it tight to the vest, and that, I think that favors Texas. If Ohio State scores on back-to-back opening drives and Texas is already out of sorts with a game plan, forget it. Sarkisian dead. They may as well pack their bags at halftime.
So you're much more comfortable. See, I think the scary part is Texas playing from in front. And that would worry me if I was looking at Texas. But I would much rather have Texas situation where they have to come from behind, right?
Is there a way that Texas goes up 17-3 early, right? And we end up the first half 17-3, and then Ohio State has to come charging back and the game goes over? Yes, but again, let me ask you, in a situation where last team with the ball wins, who do you trust more in that scenario, Texas or Ohio State? Because for me, it would be Ohio State.
Right. Yep, I agree. I agree 100% here. I think
this is an Arizona
the first
State
half matters Texas, in this one.
Where Texas can out-talent them in overtime. That's not the case. This is Ohio State, one of the most talented teams in the country. The horses in the barn are exactly the same. There's not going to be a mismatch down the field unless somebody makes a mistake on an assignment. So if it's last team with the ball wins, and if it's Ohio State with the ball, I trust them a lot more to score than I do Texas.
I saw in a look-ahead spot here a couple of weeks ago before they dismantled Oregon, the look-ahead line for Ohio State and Texas was 1.5. Ohio State a 1.5-point favorite. How in the world we got to 5.5, 6, and is beyond me. And listen, I'll tell you this. I think if we, all things being equal, in the playoffs, if we get what we have seen out of this Ohio State team the first couple of games, and we get exactly what we've seen from Texas in the first couple of playoff games, Ohio State covers his numbers and wins by a million. But if we get any deviation from either of those two teams, whether they take a step back, I think there's still room for Texas to play their best football. I think the only place to go from here for Ohio State is take a step back, man. I don't know that they can keep up what they just did against Oregon. I mean, that was unbelievable what we saw from them. Not just Oregon, too.
Regression, doesn't it? Like, doesn't there have to be some regression here for this Ohio State? That's the other part that I'm banking on in the first half under. going to take them 15 minutes to get their legs underneath them and figure out that, hey, this isn't going to be as easy as it was the last 2 weeks. So, I think there's some regression for Will Howard. I think there's some regression for Ohio State against this level of a defense.
And I do think – I don't know that we've seen the best Texas has yet. So that'll be very interesting on the big stage here tonight. We'll have much more on the national championship game plus wild card weekend next year on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, welcome back in here. The Early Line on the Sports Grid Network. Joe Ranieri alongside Mark Zeno. And in addition to the Cotton Bowl here tonight, deciding who is going to be the team to play for a national championship against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, Ohio State, Texas here tonight. Let's not forget, starting tomorrow, wild card weekend, the NFL up and off and running for a little postseason action. And it all kicks off then tomorrow at 4:30 as the LA Chargers getting ready to travel to Houston to take on the Texans. And it has been all Charger love as far as I see here, as they are looking at 42.5 as a total. It opened up at 44. So the under money coming in here, which I agree with, I think both of these teams have been great to the under. I think both defenses, once again, could very well be the story in this game. And let's not forget the way Harbaugh likes to play, right? He likes to choke it out of you here where you can't. You don't have enough time to come back and beat them. So how do you see this going here early on? With is this finally the year Herbert breaks through? It's not like he doesn't have the talent.
Well, and now he's finally got the coach, right? Brandon Staley is not on the sidelines anymore to blow a 27-3 lead. So there is that. Look, the Texans are one of two teams in this playoffs without a positive point differential on the season. And that ought to tell you all you need to know about a team that was probably overrated for a better part of this year, now is dealing with injuries. I get C.J. Stroud is extremely talented and a quarterback who can beat a lot of teams in this league. But every time this year the Texans have had to step up in class, they've come up short. And in reality, go look at this Texas team and how they got to 10-7 and the number of close calls that they had. You ready for this? They beat the Colts twice by a combined 5 points. They beat the Jaguars twice by a combined 7 points. I mean, they had one score games against the Titans, for crying out loud. Like, this is not a team that's separated from anybody. And so when you look at this Chargers team coming in here, a team that runs the ball really well, plays a ton of defense, and knows how to get after the quarterback and is extremely well coached, I get why they're a 2.5-point favorite. Look, a lot of other books have moved to 3 already and gotten to a key number here where, you know, you start to see things level off a little bit from a, from a ticket money perspective. But, you know, the game script for Houston to win this game is somehow to score a ton of points. We keep talking about correlation. If Houston only scores 20 points in this game, I don't think they win this thing. They got to get to like 24, 27 and force a Chargers offense that for the most part has been consistent but lacks firepower, has been solid but doesn't have a lot of quick strike ability. You have to get them playing from behind and ask them to start throwing their way back into a football game. If the Chargers are leading by 3 or 7, guess what? They're going to continue to grind. They're going to continue to slow the pace down, slow the tempo down, play a field position game, and do what Jim Harbaugh always does. Remember the good old Michigan days? They're willing to go toe-to-toe with you and stand there and grind it out for 60 minutes. So, and then when it comes down to it, ask your quarterback to make enough plays, and he's got a capable one.
23-3, touchdown to interception ratio. That's what Justin Herbert has done this year. In the meantime, C.J. Stroud, to me, the hardest thing about backing this Houston team is this offensive line is a mess. He has been under duress the entire year. He's turned it over 14 times. Now, call it a sophomore slump, call it whatever you want, but the reality is I think a lot of that correlates to the fact that you can't protect him. You've got a Chargers team that has scored 108 points in the past three games, and I believe the return of J.K. Dobbins really has kicked it and re-energized this Chargers team, who was lacking a little punch without Dobbins in the lineup. I don't love the matchup for Houston. I really don't. That's the problem I have here. I can't trust an offensive line and a quarterback that is running for his life and has got to be gun-shy at this point because of how many turnovers they've had. And don't forget, when they had an opportunity a year ago against the Ravens in the playoffs, boy, that did not work out well here. Either way, I'm with you. I don't think Harbaugh will show anything more than he has to, which in likelihood will be just enough to win the game, get the cover, and get out of Dodge and advance. He has been here and he has done this before. Oh, boy, is it tough to back Houston in this spot. But I do like the under, including the first half under in this one here. All right, we got many more wild card weekend games to go with. We got a whole nother hour of the early line together. Come back and join us here on The Grid.